WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
EDU.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte set its sights on the big time long ago. We wanted recognition. We wanted other cities to know we were a player. We still want the initials NC dropped from our name in news reports about Charlotte. So when the opportunity came along to get an NBA team in the 1980s, we jumped on it. Most big league prognosticators told us that the only franchise we'd likely get was McDonald's, and we proved them wrong. Today, years after the Hornets came and went, we have another NBA team, and the king of them all, the NFL's Carolina Panthers. Major League sports put cities on the map and keep them in the headlines. It's the kind of publicity you can't afford to buy. These big league franchises also generate big money for the owners, and we're told, for the cities in which they play. But sometimes these teams ask for money, not just from TV and ticket holders, but from taxpayers, the three T's of sports funding. When the Hornets asked for money to renovate the Coliseum, we said no. When they asked for a new building, we said no. They left. We built the downtown arena in hopes of attracting another team. Make that we, the taxpayers. I guess we learned a lesson because the city and county, the taxpayers, pitched in to defray infrastructure costs for Knights baseball and going up downtown. And now the Panthers have asked for $125 million to renovate Bank of America Stadium. It appears fairly certain that the taxpayers will be making those funds available. So this hour we look at the cost of being Major League. Eric Spanberg is the man laughing generously at me, for which I appreciate your presence here today. He's senior staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal and has been covering the business of sports and sports in general for them for years and years and years.
Ouch. And makes years. Me sound old.
We were together on the radio when we were 13, I think.
That's right. That's right. That's we got right. Our driver's licenses together.
That's right. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the $125 million Panther request, let's talk about the season, the team, the big expenses, the players. We just came off another season that held great promise before the first game was played and then fell flat early on. I had Mick Mixon, who was the voice of the Panthers, on this program before the season started, and he was all aglow, all agog about the possibilities here. And I don't think he was just being a rah-rah, sis-boom-bah team player. I really think he, like many other people, thought this was going to be our year. It was like they learned to play together as the season went along. Why does this keep happening?
Well, I think Jerry Richardson, for starters, would love to know the answer to that question. One of the things that has vexed this franchise throughout is the inconsistency, or maybe consistent inconsistency. As you mentioned, the Panthers had gone 2-14 in 2010, worst record in the league. They come to 2011, they draft the Heisman Trophy winner, Cam Newton. They win six games in 2011, and they are very exciting, playing a different style of football. And not just local people, but national experts thought that the Panthers would make a serious playoff bid in 2012. Instead, they come out, they go 1-5, they get humiliated on national television by the New York Giants. They fire their general manager in October, Marty Herney, who had been with the team for 14 years. And the season really unravels. Now, Ron Rivera, the head coach, saved his job by rallying the team to a 7-9 record. But the upshot of this is that the Panthers have had four winning records since they started playing in 1995. They did make that Super Bowl run, but that was a decade ago. And so Jerry Richardson is 76 years old. He does not have a whole lot of patience for this anymore. And so the thing that you've heard coming out of Mint Street over and over the last few years is we've got to have a consistent winner. And the question really is, now with the new general manager in place, can they finally find that formula?
Mm. When the team loses, as they have the last several seasons, is there an economic impact? Is there a negative economic impact? Because the PSLs mean that people have bought their season tickets, whether they go to the games or not, whether they leave at halftime or not. Does it have an economic impact? Does it matter?
Yeah, it does. Although, let's start with this. In the NFL, it is virtually impossible to screw it up financially, okay? So no matter how bad you are, by the fact of the television money that is shared alone, you're going to do very well.
But what happens if you have a bad season record like we've had the last several seasons? You don't get on Monday Night Football as often. You don't get on, what's the other night that they do football?
Oh, Sunday Night Football on NBC.
Yeah, so you don't get on as often.
Right.
That doesn't matter to you?
Well, no, it matters. I was going to say you're going to make money, some money, mm-hmm. if you're in the NFL, but when you don't play well and you're not a glamour team like the Cowboys or the Giants who are always going to be on TV, what happens is you start to have smaller crowds. And so even though you have that PSL holder who has to buy the ticket, he's not buying the $9 beer, he's not buying the jersey at the team store. And so you have sort of this ripple effect all through it where teams don't like that because a lot of the revenue that they don't have to share is what is generated in the stadium. So it very much matters. Team owners are concerned beyond being competitive and wanting to win. It's also financially a hit when they lose on the field.
Because there was this surprisingly interesting anonymous open letter published on the back page of the sports section of the Charlotte Observer months ago now from somebody who identified themselves as a perturbed Panther PSL, as a member of the Perturbed Panther PSL Owners Federation.
Very nice. Star Trek.
And the letter essentially says that Jerry Richardson and the team purposely field subpar teams and run a pyramid scheme to save money and bilk fans. No name was attached. Do we know that there is a Perturbed Panther PSL Owners Federation?
You know, it might have been John Fox, the former coach. No, I'm kidding. I was not familiar with that group until I saw the ad that you just cited. I think there is one small kernel of truth that made this into a ridiculous statement, and that is in 2010, as the NFL was looking toward a labor lockout, the Panthers, among others, did not take an aggressive stance in signing new talent. Mm-hmm. And that manifested itself because the team went 2-14. So I think there were some people that were definitely frustrated. You had Jake Delhomme and some other big names left. There were some fans frustrated that felt like Jerry Richardson and the Panthers had kind of bailed out on the season. But that season accepted. The Panthers traditionally have been criticized for overspending and, of course, not spending on the right talent. But they have put a ton of money into salaries. They are over the salary cap. And so, if anything, the losses are too expensive at the moment.
So it couldn't be what the letter alleges because right. It would be bad business to do that. And Jerry Richardson is anything but a bad
right.
business
right.
guy.
So I think it's hard to argue that he has set up some sort of pyramid scheme where he smiles every time the Panthers lose a game. By the way, if you ever see the TV shot of him in his luxury suite, he does not look like a man who is enjoying a pyramid scheme.
And then we have our other winning team, the Bobcats.
Right. just snap that 16-game home losing streak over the weekend.
So what is up with that? Is it indicative of where we are in the hierarchy of cities, or is it something else at work here?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. It is definitely harder to win when you're in a smaller to mid-tier market like Charlotte, because a lot of times you don't have as much money, even though they share a lot of money and there are salary caps. There are still ways to get around this. When you look at teams in the NBA, I'm going to take the Los Angeles Lakers, their television deal is so many hundreds of times more lucrative than the Bobcats that it's not even the same universe. And unlike the NFL, they don't share all that money. So basically what we're talking about is a lot of financial spreadsheets here when we look at these teams. But the other thing is these teams simply have not chosen their talent well. And when you look at the Bobcats, they've had one winning season since returning to the NBA to Charlotte in 2004. So,
and they came back at a time when the NBA was beginning to – feel, I don't know, what's the right word? People didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
cared less than they used to care.
And certainly not here they didn't care. And what's interesting right now is that the NBA is in a pretty good place, nationally speaking, mm-hmm. with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and all these stars, Kevin Durant. The Bobcats have no stars. And obviously, unlike college, people do not come to see the coach.
And when the Hornets arrived, they had really no stars. We developed our own, even right. though they weren't necessarily the greatest basketball players the world has ever known. The city engaged with them. They engaged with the city. It seems as though the Bobcats are a visiting team.
It does, and I think some of that is by the fact of what Robert Johnson, the original owner, did or didn't do. He blamed the community a lot. He blamed fans and business leaders, and that alienated him. They also slashed their entire community relations department at one point, so that doesn't help you. Now, they with Michael Jordan there, they have started to rebuild those things, but it still has not resonated because the team is not very good. And then there are two other big factors that people failed to mention a lot of times. One is when the NFL came at the same time the Hornets were still here, the NFL really became the big gorilla and started consuming so much of the oxygen in the room, not to mention the money. And then, you know, as you look at the Bobcats, it just has never really felt like Charlotte's team yet. You know, for whatever reason, it just has not resonated.
Well, people were very excited about Michael Jordan assuming ownership because he's a beloved figure in basketball, one of the great players, and obviously played at UNC Chapel Hill and has connections, deep-rooted connections in North Carolina. But it's almost as though he does not like to shoulder the responsibility of fame. He could be doing so much more just being at the games and glad-handing people, which would make people want to come and meet Michael Jordan. And he doesn't do that. Why?
Well, you know, when he became a minority investor with Bob Johnson, he used this phrase that he didn't want to be a show pony. In other words, he didn't want to be the old retired player at the casino.
But they need one.
They do. They do. And, you know, he's relented only at times with things like he made an ad for Presbyterian, which I'm sure everyone has probably seen. He has done some sort of camp appearances for season ticket holders. But you're right. He has not done sort of the mass hand-to-hand recruiting of fans. And I think part of the problem Michael Jordan has is that he could be doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he also owns a basketball team.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Mark Cuban, the reason Mark Cuban looks like he's won the lottery every time you see him courtside at a Mavericks game is nobody would care who he is or what he's doing unless he owned the Mavericks. Michael Jordan's going to be a superstar no matter where he is or what he does.
Jerry Jones in Dallas, is he available to the local media? Is he available to does he show up at events in Dallas? Does he have to because the Cowboys are mammothly big? Does he have to? Does he do those things?
Jerry has the kind of personality that if you called him now, he'd probably be on the air in 10 minutes. He likes to do that. He likes to go back and forth with reporters and fans. That is the way that he markets his team. Jerry Richardson takes very much the old school approach. More like the Mara family in New York, the Rooneys in Pittsburgh, and it is a much more, you know, I'm in a lofty perch, I'm presiding over this, and when I want to engage with fans, I'll go out to tailgate and see fans that way, but he does not feel the need to go through the media.
Not even now?
Well, that may change depending on how much the restaurant's fighting
because it's
fight
not
this
like,
food tax.
It's not like he's George Shinn at the end. People vilified George Shinn, the former Hornets owner, at the end. At the beginning, he was a ticker tape parade hero, and I'm not exaggerating. He got a ticker tape parade.
Imagine that.
Jerry Richardson is the man responsible for making this an NFL city. There is a lot of appreciation, I think, for that, even from non-fans of the team or of football in general, if you can find one. Why not capitalize on that? Why not go out there in the lean times and at least be the front man?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I assume some of this is his personality. It was interesting. After the closed session meeting with council and Jerry Richardson and some other team executives, the following day was the day that the Panthers announced their new general manager. Jerry Richardson, in an unusual move, stood up in front of the press and introduced him, but he never even mentioned the stadium issue. So he has his own idiosyncratic way of doing business.
Eric Spanberg is the staff writer with the Charlotte Business Journal. We're talking about the business of sports, the cost of being Major League, and we'll get to that part of it in a second here. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Beckner Museum of Modern Art's The Game of Modern Love, celebrating the enduring partnerships of artistic twosomes with cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, live music, and more, February 15th at 7. Details at Beckler.org. Well, among the concerns swirling around the shootings, the recent shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary, aside from gun control, obviously, are discussions about the state of the nation's mental health system. Here in this state, the system had long been anchored by three major psychiatric hospitals, but they were designed for long-term care. Those needing short-term care were kind of falling through the cracks until funding was provided several years ago to use hospitals across the state. We take a closer look at how that's working out tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a bipartisan group of senators announces an immigration reform plan. President Obama is expected to lay out his own proposal, pathways to citizenship, border security, and other key immigration issues.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the cost of being big league, major league, in terms of sports with Eric Spanberg with the Charlotte Business Journal. So going into Super Bowl Sunday, a game in which we will not be present yet again.
In spirit.
Yeah. Where are we? What do we know about the teams and its troubles? Because you mentioned the new general manager that they named, and they named the new general manager after Jerry Richardson already said Ron Rivera is staying as head coach, something that the general manager normally would either have a key to have a key decision-making point of view on that. Where do we stand?
Well, Dave Gettleman is the gentleman's name who is the new general manager. He comes from the New York Giants, and you may remember, Mike, that Ernie Accorsi, who was a New York Giants executive, served as a consultant to Jerry Richardson. I know you follow these things closely.
Oh, yes.
you sort of eat, sleep. So Dave Gettleman comes in, and that press conference I mentioned to you last week, one of the interesting things is there is very much a Panther way of doing things. It's a fairly buttoned up, genteel Southern organization. This guy is a brash New Yorker, originally from Boston. He was cracking jokes. He had a little bit of a different air about him, but he's also been around the league a long time. This is obviously a jump up in terms of responsibilities, but people seem to be pretty enthusiastic. He's got a lot of work to do, and one of the things he has to do is, we were talking about the pyramid scheme that does not exist, is he has a lot of hefty contracts to navigate, hopefully clear some of that salary cap space and get some new players in there. Yeah. So it won't be an overnight conversion.
Well, Jerry Richardson has been accused, perhaps unjustifiably so, of being too loyal to players and to staff members. How will this new guy click with that kind of an approach?
Well, I think that's going to be interesting because you're right. Jerry Richardson has been accused of keeping players too long, of sometimes getting too close to players. But then in other cases, this is an example of how you really can't win when you're in this kind of position. You know, when Julius Peppers left, when Jake Delhomme left, when some other players left, there was certainly a vocal group of fans that said, hey, wait a minute, how could you let these guys go? So it cuts both ways, and it seems as though the cure is winning, and when you win, everybody seems to be happy.
Well, let's talk about money.
My favorite subject.
I put it off as long as I can stand it. Panther Stadium, Bank of America Stadium, was built in 1996. Correct me if I get these figures wrong. Built in 1996 for $187 million.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they need $200 million to renovate a stadium that only cost $187 million to build not that long ago?
You know, was it Ronco?
Did we leave out the field or something? Did we forget to put the goalposts up?
Was it Ronco that used to say new and improved? So, you know, one of the things that's going on here is that the acceleration in gizmos and costs for stadiums is unbelievable. The stadiums in Dallas and New York, for example, were well over $1 billion each that opened in the last couple of years. That's a pretty hefty markup from $187 million.
Are we putting a Band-Aid on this?
Yes.
Because let's be honest.
Right. We are putting a band-aid on
it. We will never host a Super Bowl in that stadium.
I think that it's possible they could host a Super Bowl if they do these renovations. And Jerry Richardson, who is very respected with the NFL owners, as I mentioned, he's 76. Maybe they get the stadium renovated and he goes to them and says, look, this is kind of my last hurrah. I would really like to give this to the region. I would like to have a Super Bowl. Perhaps that would happen. But I don't see a stadium life. It's 17 years old now. I don't see it going beyond 30 to 35 years before a new one is
built. I mean, I don't know how long RFK in D.C. was the home of the Redskins, but it was a long, long time. And I kept seeing the stadium in the shot during the inauguration behind the Capitol building. I thought, gee, it's still standing. They haven't torn it down yet. That's not Charlotte.
Well, and Mike, that brings up a good point, though. You know, you have the exceptions, particularly in baseball, with Fenway Park and Wrigley Field, which were built in the early 1900s and have been substantially renovated. But still, what's happening here is not so much that the concrete and the seats don't work anymore. It's that fans want all these high-tech things. They want scoreboards. They want luxury suites. They want private clubs. They want better concessions. And the teams like this, of course, because they can make more money selling you a lot of these new things.
Don't fans just want to see it on television? I mean, seriously, isn't that the problem? They want these enormous electronic boards so they can see the cleats on the players at the yard on the line of scrimmage, like they do on their high definition 60-inch televisions at home. But they're in the stadium in the upper deck and they can't see that.
Yeah, the unspoken terror in the NFL and other professional sports leagues is how good television has become, how much more affordable it is. By the way, I don't know about your house, but my house, there's really not a long line to get to the restroom. The drinks are very affordable. So there is always that argument. And what the teams have to do is make it exciting enough to at least get people to come out, hopefully on a season-long basis, but at least a couple times a year. Because if you lose that studio audience, so to speak, it's not nearly as compelling on TV.
You know, I don't know what tickets cost. They cost a lot. The PSLs obviously cost a lot. But the TV revenues are enormous in football, and they're about to go up by 60%, 60%,
yes,
in the coming year. So they're not going to be hurting for TV revenues. When you go to New York or Los Angeles and you want to be in the studio audience for The Tonight Show or David Letterman, you get in free.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
If they really want to pack the stadium, let them in free. It's on television.
That's very true. I think that the Jerrys, Jones and Richardson and Daniel Snyder, they might have difficulty just parting with that ticket revenue. They kind of like it. I hate to bring in that, you know, gross.
The other thing is, if people are complaining that you have a losing team on the field and it's a $9 beer and a $50 bowl of popcorn, you sell it at cost.
Yeah. Well, but remember, Mike, for the most part, the games are sold out. The beer is still selling. The popcorn is still selling. And so we come around to the old supply and demand equation. If you keep me going, I'll talk guns and butter.
Okay. So the only two things that we know they want to use, there are other things that they want to use this money for, but we don't know what they are because it was held in the discussions have
correct
been held in closed session with the city council. And because it was held in closed session, nobody on city council revealed what was discussed. But we do know they want money for state-of-the-art video boards.
Correct.
And escalators. People can't walk up the stairs.
This is a very American situation, isn't it? When we're going to watch other people exercise, the last thing we want to do is get some exercise. But the Panthers have
talked. How many Sundays a year would that have to happen?
The Panthers have talked about this, and other teams have done similar things, which is they are concerned that the person who bought PSLs when they were 50 years old, when the Panthers came 20 years ago, give or take, is now 70 years old and doesn't like to walk up the ramp.
Okay.
I think there are a couple of easy counterarguments if you are critical of this idea of public funding. Well, one would be, of course, just walk up the ramp if you want to see the game. The second would be, why are you focused on 70-year-old fans when you really need to be worried about the next generation of fans? But you know, we're not making decisions for the Panthers. And, Mike, as we've talked about this before, when you get into this game of professional sports, you sort of sign up for these kinds of discussions and these kinds of investments.
So when the stadium is full, how many people are sitting in the bowl?
$74,000.
$74,000. If just
Not dollars.
If just half of them bought a $9 beer, that's a lot of money.
That's WFAE money.
Yeah. So when you're making that kind of money, and you're making money from the TV revenues, and you're making money from other sales and jerseys, get a piece of the jerseys that are being sold at Belk because you've got your logo on it, why do you need help from the city to the tune of $125 million or any other outside organization to do what you need to do to make your business more successful than it already is?
Well, I think clearly they don't need help. It's not as though they couldn't go to their friends at Bank of America and get a loan.
Do they even need to get the loan?
I think that this conversation really revolves around a couple things. One is because they can. And two is the argument that the Panthers will make, and I think have already started to make both in Raleigh and in Charlotte, is look at all we've done for the region. Look at that intangible, unquantifiable attention that you mentioned at the top of the show. Look at the player payroll and the state income tax and what we do for hotels and restaurants and all those kinds of things. They'll say that, and they'll also say, look, when we came to town, we didn't get the sweetheart deal that a lot of people get. We got $60 million in land and infrastructure, and we paid for everything else ourselves.
In fact, it has been argued, and I think there is justification in this, that Charlotte got the sweetest deal in the history of professional sports when the Panthers arrived here, built their own stadium with their own money, asked for very little except for street improvements and water and sewer hookup for the stadium. And people, experts in sports, have said this is the sweetest deal in the history of professional sports.
That's right. And I think that for people who have been here a long time, it's hard to adjust the reality because you say, well, look, the first time you didn't ask me for it, so why are you asking me for it now? You know, when you hear people that are really taken aback by this, and it's similar to what happened with the Bobcats. When the Bobcats opened the new arena, now obviously that arena was funded with public money, but I do—
And not for them.
It was just for the NBA. Right. But what happened was, you remember the ticket prices went up a great deal from Tivola Road to Uptown, and people who had been NBA fans were in shock. They couldn't believe that someone would feel the need to raise, but I always paid $12 to go sit on Tivola Road. Why do I have to pay $40 or $50? And so
there were more seats on Tivola Road.
There were more seats, and there weren't as many amenities and so on and so forth. So I just think it's part of that difficult adjusting period. It's like people who tell you what they used to pay for gas. Well, yeah, that's what you used to pay.
So you said one of the reasons that they come to the city is because they can. And you've said also that the NFL is the big gorilla in the room. There aren't many cities in America that have a professional NFL football team.
Correct.
Is there any way to quantify what the presence of the Panthers has meant to this city over time?
The way I would quantify it is that people who love the Panthers in football will vastly overestimate it, and those who are opposed will vastly underestimate it. But I don't think—
Well, has anybody run numbers? Like, we just got yesterday at 2 o'clock what the Democratic National Convention meant in terms of revenues for the city and for businesses in the city. Has anybody run a study on what this team has brought in since they opened the doors of Panther Stadium?
Well, they have run studies of what annually sports brings in and what the Panthers bring in. John Connaughton, who has been quoted plenty of times and somewhat controversially on some of these studies, has calculated figures. He said earlier this year that baseball would bring in $38 million a year in direct economic impact. I find that hard to believe, but I'm not an economist. So, but what I'm saying is you can go out to the respective sides and you can find economists who say this is worth hundreds of millions of dollars a year. You can find other economists who say it's another movie theater. You're just moving around disposable income. So, I think the answer is, I hate to equivocate to death, but I think the answer is somewhat in the middle.
So aside from a blow to our pride, if the team were to go away, what would it mean?
Well, I certainly think you have some uptown problems. I mean, you have a big empty concrete bunker over there all of a sudden that's not doing a whole lot.
We know how to take down buildings.
That's true. We do know how to do that. The restaurants and bars would certainly
really? It's one day a week.
Well, but I mean,
wait, so how many home games do they play? 10?
They play 10, and you got to remember, some people do come in for the weekend. I'm not saying it would be a devastating effect, but there would be some impact.
There are 364 days when this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not arguing that the city would be devastated. Life would go on. The sun would come up. But yeah, there would be some impact. I think the biggest impact is the blow to the pride that you're talking about, and I don't.
And what about the incalculable publicity? There is no question that when the blimp is flying overhead and we're taking skyline shots and it's on national television, word Carolina Panthers is being mentioned and it's associated in some distant, somebody living in North Dakota, in some distant way to Charlotte, that we are getting notoriety. We're getting our presence is known beyond the borders of the city and the county of Mecklenburg. But does that translate into anything?
See, I think that's like trying to determine the effectiveness of advertising. It's just so hard to know what exactly that impact is. I think any rational person is going to say to you, when they watch Monday Night Football and they see Pittsburgh, they don't immediately say, you know what, I'm going to get the family, put them in the car, and we're moving to Pittsburgh. But is there some intangible value when you roll it into DNC and other things going on in the city? Yeah, probably. But how much do you want to spend on that? That's really what this debate is coming down to.
Roger,
how much taxpayer money do you want to spend?
One of our listeners, Roger, tweets, corporate welfare. The Panthers are a profitable business. There should be no public funding other than for infrastructure. And as you have pointed out, this is arguably, in some cases, another movie theater. Movie theaters don't get money. Nor do restaurants, nor do bars, nor do automobile dealerships. Why do sports teams get this money?
Well, because there are a lot of movie theaters in a lot of cities. There are a lot of bars and restaurants. There are only 32 NFL teams, and it may not be fair, it may not be right, but that's where we have gotten ourselves, I think, as a country. And so I don't mean that to condemn it. It's just football is a national obsession right now. The other thing we haven't even gotten into, Mike, is long-term health of the NFL and other leagues. That's always a concern as well.
Mike on Facebook says, shame on Charlotte using tax bucks for entertainment. Is that what we're using this money for? If the money goes, and it's fairly certain that it will, but if it goes, is it for entertainment?
Well, yeah. I mean, professional sports is entertainment. I think that the argument – I know that the argument that will be made is this is an economic development mission, and perhaps if you land a Super Bowl as a part of these renovations, then you can make a much stronger argument. I think the other thing that's going on here is that you don't want to be the mayor or the councilman who is a part of losing an NFL franchise, because that is something that will have a lasting legacy. Mm.
Gary on the web, does it say something about a society when it is willing to find money for entertainment while at the same time providing inadequately for those in need? Biblically speaking, it most certainly does say something about that society, and what it says is not complimentary.
Well, I'm not the first to observe that the Colosseum is one of the buildings that has survived the longest in Rome. So this is not new, this obsession with sports and entertainment. And certainly you can always make that argument. I think one problem when you go down that road, though, Mike, is, and I'm not saying they should give the money to the Panthers, but there's always something. I mean, at some point you can talk yourself out of doing anything other than education and roads and sidewalks, and maybe that's the way to go. That's above my pay grade.
If we said no, would they walk?
Jerry,
have to walk because there are no escalators. But
well done. Jerry Richardson has been pretty adamant that he is not threatening to move the team. But here is the kicker, so to speak, is that he has also mandated that the team be sold 2 years after his death. He's 4 years removed from heart replacement surgery. And so the worry among business leaders and political leaders is if we don't get some sort of deal with Jerry Richardson done that keeps the team here at least for 10 to 15 years – what happens when we get a new owner who's an unknown quantity?
Eric Spanberg, our guest from the Charlotte Business Journal. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more on the cost of being Major League in Charlotte in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFA. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Queen's University of Charlotte, presenter of the 2012 Businesswoman of the Year, honoring Laura Schulte of Wells Fargo at the March 15th luncheon. Details at queens.edu. And the Wine Vault 3, hosting a wine tasting of over 21 heavy, rich red wines in Founders Hall, February 5th from 6:30 to 8. Reservations at 704-548-WINE. A bipartisan group of U.S. senators announces an immigration reform plan. President Barack Obama is expected to lay out his own proposal on today. And Diane and her guests will talk about pathways to citizenship, border security, and other key immigration issues in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Listen.
The radio illusionist plays or ought to play by different rules. Ears held through our hypnotic conjuring of associations, memories, inspirations, and ideas.
Listen to me.
Listen.
And then you just turn and you find yourself noticing.
Public radio that plays by different rules. Public Radio Remix from PRX. Saturday, 9 to midnight on WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the business of sports here with Eric Spanberg, staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. He's been covering all of this for a very, very long time. He's older than dirt.
Help me up, Mike.
You alluded to something that it actually is kind of fascinating, and that is the fact that the Richardsons own, Jerry Richardson owns 48%. Of the Panthers, and has said that he won't move the team. But there is no succession plan in place now that his sons are no longer part of the team for whatever reason. That's a personnel issue, and it's puzzling to me because I like Mark a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he was in heaven when he was there. But as you say, Jerry Richardson has said in his will he wants the team sold 2 years after he dies. What's the motivation for that? Why?
Well, we don't know the full motivation, but part of it is when you look at the value of professional sports teams, a lot of times the tax bill that comes with inheriting a franchise, remember the average NFL team's worth $1 billion, makes it cost prohibitive for it to go on. I think in this case, everyone wants to know what exactly happened to move Mark and his brother John out of the future ownership, because that was what all of us expected to happen.
Yeah. So if the team is sold, it may not be sold to somebody who has ties or strings to this region. It could be sold to, I don't know, I can't think of the head guy at the Bank of America.
Oh, Brian Moynihan.
So he gets to move to Boston.
Yes. Look out, Patriots. Here come the Panthers. But Tom Brady, forced to relocate.
But it could be sold to some other person who would like to have it in their hometown.
Right.
So are there any guarantees attached? If the money of the $125 million goes from Charlotte to the Panthers, would there be any guarantees of keeping the team here in lieu of with a different owner?
Now we get into contractual law negotiations. And so that is another question that I and others have been asking, which is, as you put this framework together for a deal for the $125 million, what are the stipulations? Is it that the Panthers stay 10 or 15 or 20 years? But not only that, what are the penalties? Because if you put in, you know, a mild, meek penalty, then it's easy because Los Angeles or another city, there's always another city. That's the brilliance of professional sports. There's always one other city that's desperate to get a team. And they can make a great offer, and then the penalty doesn't matter. So the devil very much is in the details with this.
And then there's the question of whether we renovate this stadium, and at some point down the road they say we have to have a new stadium because we just have to have one because this is too old to play in anymore. It's 5 minutes old.
Right. I can't drive this old Porsche. I need a new one.
That's right. Then there's the question of PSLs. Dennis in Troutman, welcome to the program.
Well, let me just preface this with the fact that I have attended every single home Carolina Panther game, including every game in Clemson.
Wow. You poor man. Congratulations. I'm sorry.
Hey, I call it the horrible streak. But I bought my PSLs to see football, and I read in this morning's paper that there is a clause in my little contract that says that my is a permanent suite license as long as the team plays in that building. And so if they were to build another stadium, even if it were in Charlotte, that would exclude the original PSL owners, although I'm sure they'd be offered a deal. But the reason they might want to ever build another building, and then I'll let your expert discuss this, Michael, it's parking. Do you know how many parking spaces the Panthers do not own? I mean, if you think about it,
right.
If they could find property big enough to have a parking for 20,000 cars, that's a huge amount of revenue.
So if they found that, say 5 years down the road, and the NFL comes back and says, yeah, you can have the Super Bowl, but you really have to put it in a new building, that would put your PSL at risk. Would you buy a new one?
Would I buy a new one? Frankly, at my age, no. I probably would.
And he's 31. No, I'm kidding.
and you live in Troutman, or at least you're calling us from Troutman. Is that where you live?
Yeah, I'm from Iredell County. My famous comment is, "Hey, I want Charlotte to give $125 million to this team because, hey, I live in Iredell County and I have PSLs, man."
That's exactly where I'm going with this question, because as I understand the proposal the way we would finance this $125 million, one of the proposals is we would tax restaurant sales and bar sales within the city of Charlotte, not even Mecklenburg County. Don't forget Iredell County, not even Mecklenburg County. Only the city would be paying for it. So I think you should have to pay a tax to come into town on Sunday. What do you think about that, Dennis?
I made my point. You guys.
All right. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Mike, you turned into the mayor of London there. Just a tax every time you come through.
I should do a sports talk show. This is more fun than I've had in years. So what about that? It would only be the city of Charlotte at the moment. That's
right.
One of the proposals. Why? Why not the county?
Well, I think that what's going on here is politics, and when the towns get involved, the surrounding towns that are in Mecklenburg County, and there are taxes, they want their little bit of joy as well. And so I think that the city sees this as a cleaner transaction because they want to get this done quickly. They want to try and get this deal put to bed, and so they can rest easily on the Panthers being here longer. But the other thing, Mike, is we haven't even talked about this, is what they're talking about right now is an additional restaurant bar tax, and the restaurants have not expressed a whole lot of joy and optimism about this yet.
Yes, this is something that would affect their patrons within the city of Charlotte. And we have to remember that when we talk about the city of Charlotte, we're not just talking about the downtown core. The city of Charlotte is pretty much the whole county,
right?
Except for a few
towns.
So if you want to go out and eat, if this passes, and this is how they decide to fund it, if you want to go out and eat, how much more is it going to cost you over the course of time?
So you pay, it's a 1% tax, so you pay another, penny. That's easy math.
So depending upon how often
right.
you go out, it
right.
could cost you, $26, $50 more a year.
Right.
Would you really drive to Davidson or Pineville or Fort Mill to save that money to go out to eat? Or would you just, suck it up and pay the tax?
Well, my guess is most people would suck it up. But if you own a restaurant, here's why you're probably concerned. First of all, you don't want anything that makes your bill bigger, no matter how minuscule. But then the other thing is we're looking at tax reform in Raleigh right now.
Yeah.
And one of the big ways that the legislators are looking at to lessen personal income and corporate taxes is, of course, by increasing service taxes, sales taxes. And so then you get into a dicey neighborhood if you're the guy that's running the restaurant.
Has it ever been mentioned by anyone that perhaps they should increase the taxes on the Panther tickets, on Panther's concessions, on Panther paraphernalia, etc.?
Very strangely enough, Mike, there has been no conversation about that.
Why not? It would be a user tax.
Right. It
Why
would be
not?
A user tax. And
Why should I pay taxes if I've never been to a game?
Right. I mean, there's certainly a legitimate argument there. And I think that what is happening is the Panthers have said, no, we're not interested in doing that. Now, they haven't said that, but why else would you write it off? And remember, Mike, during the Hornets talks, there was discussion of ticket taxes and things like that, and the team fought and fought and fought, and now they're in New Orleans, and they're called the Pelicans.
Yes, they are. But if you're already paying $9 for a beer, which seems to me to be insanity, would it really matter to you to pay another penny per dollar on the beer?
Well, let me say, you will pay that food tax on concessions in the stadium as well, yes, but you're right. What if you had a dedicated source? I mean, it's very reasonable, and the only reason that I can come up with that it isn't being discussed is because the team is not in favor of it.
Now, the other part of this, of course, is that it is alleged that the other thing that I think the Charlotte Observer floated was the idea of taking the excess money that we're getting from taxes already levied for the convention center and use that, because we're getting more money than we need
right.
to pay the convention center debt, and just take that money and use it. And there seems to be no appetite
no.
for that. And it's because I understand that if we were to levy this tax the way they proposed it, it would generate more revenue than they need for the stadium.
Uh-oh. Where are we going now, right?
The trolley.
Yeah. Well, one of the ones that I've heard bandied about is this idea of an amateur sports complex, likely over by Bojangles and Ovens Auditorium. This is something that's been floated in the city's long-term funding plan, and a lot of tourism people look at amateur sports, and I'm talking about kids' tournaments that come through town. Mm-hmm. It's a huge driver, because whenever the children go off to play soccer or whatever they play, they drag parents and grandparents with them who need a place to stay, and they have to eat and all those things. So I would look at that as one of the prime suspects for this excess revenue.
Do you have any empirical evidence as to what they're that's one of the things they're thinking about, or is this just something that you know about and therefore it makes sense?
Well, no, there has been some leaked information, I guess, that this is one of the areas they will look at. It's not confirmed, but it would make sense for them to do that. And I think, Mike, this is where people get frustrated, is because we're talking about maybe the tax generates more than it needs, and we're talking about never looking at a ticket tax, all these things.
Could they sunset it?
They could, and the House Speaker, Tom Tillis, who, of course, is from Mecklenburg County, has said that he will demand that the tax be ended in a finite period. Mm-hmm. The other thing—
Just in time to fund a new building.
I was going to say, this is where I'm looking. I would think it won't be out of circulation long, because it'll be time for a new stadium.
Maria in Charlotte couldn't hold, but she says Bank of America Stadium should look at including some professional soccer games as added revenue to help pay for the upgrades at the stadium. It would increase the number of events held there and bring in money, not to mention diversifying Charlotte's sports options. First of all, the Richardsons own the building.
Correct.
And for the longest time, they didn't want anybody on that field except the Panthers.
And Billy Graham, he got a pass one.
So would that be an option? Are there soccer teams out there who would want to play there?
The Panthers have actually hosted several soccer exhibitions with national teams from Mexico and other countries, and actually done really well with those. They've done them in the summer during the offseason. As far as a regular Major League Soccer team, I don't think they would play in a stadium that big. The other thing, though, I will say is the Panthers, as you say, have shied away from external events. They've been more aggressive lately. They had a Kenny Chesney concert in the summer. That was the first one that had been there in a long time, these soccer exhibitions I mentioned. So it seems like they're a little more willing. And remember, they have the ACC Championship game and the Belk Bowl. Another piece of this, Mike, is would the city get some sort of discounted rate on the stadium as a part of investing in these improvements?
And I guess the next Republican nominee for president will be making his acceptance speech in the stadium when they have the convention.
That's right. Chris Christie or Marco Rubio, you pick.
All right. You need a big building for Chris Christie. Michael on Facebook, as for the notoriety comment, my cousins were here for the holidays from L.A. and didn't know whether the Panthers were in North or South Carolina, or if they were like the Giants or the Jets and playing across state lines. And that does bring us to this. If the city of Charlotte is going to foot the bill for this, why aren't they the Charlotte Panthers? If we want this publicity for Charlotte, why aren't they the Charlotte Panthers? If South Carolina isn't going to kick in a penny, why are they the Carolina Panthers?
That's a great question, Mike, and I really have no answer for you other than I guess the team has just decided it's a non-starter. I haven't heard anyone politically ask the question of, hey, look, we're putting city money in this. Why isn't there a name change, or maybe even a sign inside the stadium bowl that on TV says, welcome to Charlotte? just has not been broached.
I suppose they could. There's some land opening up in Fort Mill. I suppose they could move the stadium to Fort Mill.
We could put it at the racetrack right in the middle. And
that's right. Asa on Facebook, the stadium is an economic development project. The Panthers are not the only team that will use the stadium. There is at least one bowl game played there. There has been international and pro soccer games there. It is a huge benefit to the city to have a well-maintained maintained venue like Bank of America Stadium that attracts an NFL team plus many other big-time sporting events. This brings money and jobs to Charlotte regularly. He's right.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, there, it's not a one-sided argument on either side. There is plenty of gray to go around.
And Patrick on the web, at what point does a team get so much public money that they become community owned? Seems like the Packers model is a lot more truthful.
People love the Packers model, and every time a city has one of these debates about investment, invariably someone says, well, why don't you just let the community own them, and then we would all feel a lot better. The problem, again, is there are 32 teams, and the owners who own the teams like to own the teams.
And as you pointed out earlier on, this is not something that we've put a lot of money into in the past.
Right.
We really haven't done this. As I said, I think I said that many sports professionals have said we have the sweetest deal in the history of professional sports. And Mark Gainis of Chicago-based Sports Corp, which has advised NFL teams on new stadium construction, says that compared to other cities, Charlotte is getting a good deal and that people should just grab it and not ask too many questions. I don't like the last part of that. I think we should ask questions about it. But does he have a point?
He does in the – and I know people who load these deals are screeching to a halt right now in their cars. But, again, in the context of professional sports, he does have a point. If you want to be in this game, if you want to be in this realm – you're looking at big ticket items. You're looking at investing. And so you have to decide, is it worth it to me as a citizen? And if it is, $125 million is a pretty good deal, as crazy as that sounds.
And in the scheme of things, I know this sounds like blasphemy to a lot of people, it's not a lot of money.
Right. Look, the budget for the city is close to $2 billion a year. You know, county, similar range. This is not to discount all the things we need for schools and teachers and all those other things.
I have 15 seconds. The Pelicans. Are we getting the Hornets name back?
My guess is yes. I think so. I think there's so much nostalgia and love of Hugo and Teal and Alexander Julian that it will be back.
And it couldn't hurt. Eric Spanberg, staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is